podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Again, they've only got three forwards in the lineout, and it's been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing.
Welcome to this week's Attacking Scrum podcast. Tons to get through. We've got another round of the UFC complete. We've also got Wayne Pivak's squad for the Autumn Internationals to have a look at. And I think we're going to dedicate the whole of the second half to that. So make sure you keep listening for that. Don't skip ahead. Don't skip ahead just to that bit. Because Murph's got some brilliant chat for us on the UFC, and so is Dan. So you won't want to miss that. Which seems the ideal opportunity to introduce the boys. How you doing, Murph?
Good, thanks. Yeah, yourself?
Yeah, I know you're not, mate, because you were guzzling a double espresso, which isn't standard for half seven on a Sunday night for you. How's the hangover bearing up?
It's not so much a hangover, it's just a little pick-me-up, really. I'm at that stage of life where any amount of beer can completely bugger your sleep. And so I just like fancying a nap right now, so I thought this would be an opportune moment to get some caffeine down me, blast through this, and come out smelling the roses the other end.
Exactly, and it's an ideal segue. It's like a perfect little pop pass for me to say a big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades, eh? If like Murph, you're struggling with a stinking hangover, or you just, or you're like Dan Killick, up at 4 o'clock in the morning, ready to sell million-pound houses. Then get yourself over to socoffeetrades.co.uk to get some top quality coffee. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, very good. I had my coffee at about six this morning, which was nice. And I wasn't coming in at six, which has been known.
Yeah.
But, good weekend. Working Saturday, always a bit short, but nice to see some good rugby, Jed.
Well, where do you want to start then? We can either do this in chronological order, or we can mix it up a bit. Let's stick with chronological, shall we? Start on Friday night. Dragons losing at home to. Right, let's make sure we get this right. Now, this made me laugh on Friday night, Murph, and you may have heard it, but it seems that we're not the only ones who can't get the names of the teams right, because the head coach insisted that they were playing the Ospreys instead of the Dragons.
Ospreys, yeah, he mentioned them a couple of times as well, didn't he? It wasn't a one-off.
It was quite funny that Stormers head coach saying that tough fixture to come to the Ospreys. Well then. It might be further on down the line. Obviously a disappointing result for the Dragons losing to the Stormers. Dan, you were pretty glowing with your assessment of the Dragons the week before. What went wrong?
Yeah, well, it was... the Dragons lost it in the sort of final 20, really, didn't they? I thought the Dragons were outstanding. Really great performance from them. Firstly, it was a top game. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, Dragons against the Stormers. Atmosphere seemed really good down at Rodney Parade. It was so physical. Like the first 15 minutes, I was almost fearing for some of the safety of the players out there. It was brutal, wasn't it? Big, massive hits from both sides. And just like a really high intensity. If I think back to some of the games last year, it's a massive step up. Then they brought that real edge, haven't they? And the Dragons met them. And I thought the Dragons brought like a really clever game plan. They you know, Sam Davis played well. I thought Ben Carter was into, you know, into everything. Moriarty was just almost no regard for his body. And that was probably typified when, did you see them putting his, fiddling around with his nose? Mm. Oh. And Tame Basham, what a performance from him. I love the way he takes the ball at pace and literally he's, I think we've been crying out for someone in the back with to really, you know, go in with everything they've, you know, they've got. And those boys can tackle, but they struggle to stop him. He'd go into them. They would almost be like a split second where there'd be no movement. And then he'd propel himself forward again. Great over the ball. Gets an offload out, gets his hands free. I thought he was superb. And it was just a real shame on the result at the end. I think that the Stormers probably did deserve the win. But I think a losing bonus point would have been about right. But a top game of rugby for me.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely come back to the Tame Basham and Ross Moriarty stuff when we look at the Wales squad as well, because I think, again, it'll be interesting to see how that form translates into the autumn. I would say it was more the second half, I think, actually. I thought the first half they were excellent. Second half, I don't know whether it was just didn't play enough in the right areas, didn't seem to create a great deal. And I don't know. It didn't feel like they were going to win the game for me in that second half. I thought the second half performance was, I don't know whether the first half might have just taken too much out of them, but it was I thought it was a disappointing second half performance, especially when the first was so good. What did you make of that whole game, Murph?
Yeah, I agree. First half was great. I mean, friends of mine, I wasn't watching it live. But friends of mine were texting me saying that Dragons are having a right old go year, and regularly you were seeing the whole back row having a charge from deep, like the off a line out or a set piece or whatever. First of all, you'd see Wainwright, then you'd see Moriarty off the next phase, then the beating. And it was actually thrilling to watch. But they couldn't sustain it. And even though, you know, the opposition got, I'm saying opposition in case I get the name wrong, by the way. Even though the opposition got on top second half, I still think the score was unfair to the Dragons because they were pushing for a try late on.
Yeah.
But that breakaway, which is probably a little bit symptomatic of the way they were sloppy in the second half with just controlling possession, controlling the ball, you know, just, well, keeping the bloody ball, you know. And so that made it look like a shade comfortable win, but it wasn't comfortable for the away team. I felt sorry for them. I thought there was actually more promise in that defeat, I think, the performance in that defeat there than there was the last week in victory myself. So,
do you? That's really interesting. Yeah.
The first half was absolutely thrilling, I thought.
It was close. Yeah. It was close to test match intensity, I think, actually. I liked it, like Dan was saying, some of the hits, it was absolutely massive. And I think, again, particularly the back row, whether in defence or attack, there was just a real huge amount of intensity for it. And that's massively encouraging. I think that the bit that concerns me is that the only points we scored were when they were down to 14 men. And like I say, I didn't really feel like... there were a couple of opportunities in the second half, but it was not... that's the bit that kind of concerns me a little bit. But I don't know. For me, all the things are encouraging, but no wins from three at home. They should have had a win in... either against the Ospreys or Leinster or this one. You know, I think that's they'll definitely be disappointed with that. But I mean, yeah, in terms of the actual performances, it's been a good start to the season, but it's disappointing that there's only that one victory to show for it.
Dragons pack looks totally different, isn't it? Just the way in which they can front up now, because I think it was disappointing the way the Dragons lost, but equally I think they can be hugely proud of that performance because they're such a physical side, aren't they? And you think, you know, a season ago if they played against that Stormers side a year ago, I think the physicality that team brought, it would have probably been, you know, double that scoreline, really, just from them being direct, like super direct. Lot to take from it, but a lot to work on as well, isn't there, really?
It might be a couple of problems coming down the road with Will Rowland's being unavailable because he not just at the Dragons,
impact,
but Yeah, well, not just here and now, but the Wasps used to start and finish every game. Mm. And so when he's away on Welsh duty, and also if he's just got to, they're going to have to, I mean, he's played, it seems like to me, I might be wrong, he's played every minute so far. Nearly every minute anyway. So he's going to have to be rested, and then it just doesn't, the whole pack doesn't look as solid without him. And also the new props they brought in are going to have a game off. So that might, if they're only getting this far, you know, with their full strength out, the rest of the autumn with internationals missing could be some painful matches coming up.
Yeah, I think
a good point as well. And you've got the back row out as well, haven't you?
The whole of the back row and both the second rows are gone. And then you've got Elliot D into the mix as well. And then, like you said, the new props, who I think have made a massive difference, are going to be in need of a rest as well. So it's it is going to be tricky. And obviously that all starts next week against Cardiff, which we'll come on to at the end of the show. Let's move on to Saturday afternoon. I thought this game, Ospreys against Benetton, it was one of the strangest games I've seen for a long time, but it ended up being another absolute cracker, actually. I mean, the Ospreys for the first 20 minutes were just giving away penalty after penalty after penalty, and then for a 20-minute period, suddenly turned into like the 77 Barbarians or something. It was it was an incredible game, and to go down to the wire. We said they needed to get a result, and they got one. Were you impressed, Murph?
I don't know. I wasn't. Weirdly, they've won away from home, so it's really speaking, it's the best result of the weekend for the Welsh Regions. But I still thought, as a unit, the first half, the Newport Dragons put together was more impressive than anything the Ospreys did over in Italy. So you're right. It was a strange game because I think if the Ospreys were settled and confident when they went 20. Points to three up, I think they were at one stage, or they were a good 15 points plus in front. I think that could have gone on to be 30 plus points win.
Mm.
But the only thing it did was really wake up Benetton. Mm. And they were smashing into him for a while, and the Ospreys had to defend really well to, in the end, to win the game. But I mean, aside, I enjoyed seeing Reese Webb at his best. Mm-hmm. Scoring that try and putting other people away on a regular, well, not regular basis, but a few times, and I still think Alamein Jones is not fully fit.
Mm.
It just seems to be. I don't know what it is. He just seems to be putting his hands on his knees a lot. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I mean, again, it was. I don't think it was anything in there that was massively alarming, but.
I agree.
It's just very strange that you don't see him play in either a black or a red jersey, and he's 9-10 out of 10. But yeah, it was a slightly odd one in that regard. Like I say, I would be very surprised if this is the candle flickering. I'd be more inclined to think that actually it's taken a bit of time to get the engine running off the back of a big season, and hopefully it's going to come at the right time ahead of the autumn games.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything more than that to it. Before Dan has a go, a special mention to Alice Cuthbert's try-saving tackle.
Yeah, which it was a cracker, wasn't
turns out saved the match.
Yeah.
What a tackle.
Mm. Yeah, that was unreal. It was superb, wasn't it? And you know, obviously a guy who's had a fair amount of stick for defensive positioning and conceding tries out wide in the past, but yeah, that was absolutely spot on, wasn't it?
I think the winger who knocked in to touch would be a bit disappointed because normally you'd want to get your legs off the floor, if you know what I mean. And then if he does knock you out, you're still off the ground. But
I think it was Ioane actually who had a storming game as well.
He did, yeah.
It was only Cuthbert who could have made that tackle, really, wasn't it? With his height, with his size, and
yeah.
He didn't really have
a lot
right
of ground as well. If you watch the replay, he covered a lot of ground. Yeah.
He didn't really have a right to get there, did he? Really, but he, it was a That was just such a huge moment. That.
Yeah, I'm quite intrigued by this Ospreys fullback as well. Actually,
Nagy.
Nagy, yeah, who I've I don't, it's only probably only the third time or something I've seen him, but there seems to be something about him there, whether it's kind of like raw athlete, but a bit of, you know, kicking ability. He looks like a proper 15 to me, if you see what I mean. He's not a wing, you know, a 15/14. He looks like an out and out 15, which I'm always a big fan of, those players who have the proper out and out ball skills to you know, to be a proper fullback. So yeah, I'm quite excited by him. I think
he's under the radar a little bit, isn't he? I don't know. I'm not even exactly sure where they've got him from.
I want to say academy, but I might be talking absolute crap there.
If he is, he's a great product.
Yeah, and I think the thing that we said was it was going to be a tough game on paper, because Benetton and No Mugs have started the season pretty well. Ospreys had an absolute honking performance last week. And they kind of needed to get something. And off those first 20 minutes, I honestly thought, God, the wheels are coming off here. But they did get the result. It was just weird because it was a game, like, it was kind of split into four quarters. The Ospreys won two of them and Benetton won two of them. But yeah, ultimately they just got the enough to get over the line. Later on that day, I think it's safe to say that Leinster won all four quarters in their encounter against the Scarlets. Although they started quite brightly, Scarlets, to be fair. And there's no, you know, there's never any disgrace in losing to Leinster, but it was another hammering. And defensively, they look really, really poor to me. You know, I think even the shipping 50 points to Leinster would not have been what they had in mind, and that's the one thing that just hasn't seemed to click at all season for me. Is that where you see the problem, Dan?
On this one, I've actually only seen the highlights of this, so I'm going to throw a pass over to Murph on this.
No problem. They scored a good try first up, Scarlets, to go in front, and I don't think there's any issues with the backs at the Scarlets. I mean, it's weird because if you look at the side picked this week and the side picked to face Munster, it should be more than capable of doing okay in this league. I mean, there's hardly any. You look through and there's hardly anyone when you think, well, you know, you might do in some sides in Wales, but it was strong all the way through. You know, even on the bench, I can't remember if it was at the bench from this week or last week, but on the bench was one Lion and two internationals to come off the bench. And yet they're playing against sides and shipping tons of points. So I tempted to say that the squad is too good to carry on like this. And, you know, I mean, I suppose in a way it can't get any worse. They can't play any worse at the moment, especially defensively. But there are still signs of their back play. I suppose we'll come on to him later, but because of the squad reaction, but Johnny McNichol played well, which he needed to in light of what's happened this week. So, Leinster, obviously the resources, you know, the size of their squad and everything else. But what does bother me sometimes, because this goes on for season after season, is I know they got more ability within their squad, but they're just better drilled than every Welsh region by about five times. And lack of depth and lack of ability doesn't mean you can't be drilled and drilled and drilled so everything moves slickly. Like first half, at times, the Dragons, it was very slick. They were coming off lineouts or scrums, and then phases coming round with each back row forward just smashing. Every player was bollocking onto the ball, and that is what Leinster is like for 80 minutes all the time. And there's no reason, even though you haven't got, your players aren't actually as high quality or high caliber, there's no reason why you can't be as drilled. I mean, obviously, if you're going to get beaten on the gain line, if you haven't got a team full of British Lions like the Leinster side have, but there's no excuse. Quite a few of the games for the regions this weekend, there'd be a phase play and then everyone would be looking around because they don't know what they're going to do next.
Yeah,
they'd be, you know, with the scrum half looking left and then looking right and then deciding where it's going to go. Might happen two, three times a season for Leinster where they're not sure exactly what they're doing at all times, like a machine. And being drilled, I think, is not an ability thing. It's a coaching thing. To be slick and drilled is just from being familiar with the people around you. It's got nothing to do with how good the opposition are or how good you are.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it's a great point. I also think that the scoreline could have been even worse, because I think Gareth Davis was very lucky to escape, at the very least, a yellow for that head-on-head collision.
Especially over there.
And, you know, you could argue that there were mitigating circumstances because he ducked. But if he hadn't ducked, he'd have still caught him around the chin, I think. And, it was just reckless. And he'd already knocked the ball on as well. I know he's committed, but...
I thought he was good, though, actually.
I thought he had a much sharper game, but it's just one of those things that really could have made matters a lot worse and picked up a ban.
He didn't look like a player. He didn't look like a scrum half in a side that's getting 50 per on him. Put it that way.
Yeah,
he didn't look like that at all. I thought he was easily as good as his opposite number, and looks up for the autumn, if you know what I mean.
Strangely, there were a couple of positives in the backs, and I thought Johnny Williams was probably the biggest of those. You know, I think constantly making yards over the gain line, and to be doing that against that Leinster side, I think is really, really encouraging. Again, particularly as we go into the autumn. So if you do it in a, you know, against that Leinster side while you're getting absolutely humped, I think that's fairly encouraging. But yeah, in the backs there was some nice stuff, but it just weren't able to string together any proper territory, and that Leinster side is relentless. So loads and loads and loads of stuff to work on for the Scarlets, because it's not been a good start at all.
The only defence you could say is it was absolutely fully loaded Leinster, which doesn't actually take the field very often.
Well, not in this league.
Exactly. They play in Europe. The inside centre was the only guy whose name escapes me.
And he was man of the match?
No, the inside centre who would normally be first choice. The Lion.
Henshaw
was missing. Yeah. Everyone else was there. I couldn't think of anyone else that was missing. So, it's exactly off the back of last week. It's exactly what Scarlett didn't want to face.
Yeah.
If they faced their seconds, it might have only been 35. Mm. But, I think, like I say, their squad is so strong. It's hard to imagine them carrying on in this vein. But yeah, they've got to get on with it, you know.
Yeah, and I think
they've got to get the basics right, haven't they? Yeah. Set piece collisions. The bits that I've seen from the Scarlets, they're missing. You know, they're obviously not winning the set piece, but they're on their tackling. They're not like dominating tackles. They're missing quite a lot of first step hits, and then the momentum just is literally coming all out of the game for them. Mm-hmm. And they're chasing. They do a few nice things, but they're not doing the nuts and bolts, are they?
And the thing is as well, you do that against Leinster and you concede 70 yards. You know, you miss one tackle and boom, it's away, because they've got some massive great run from Conan or one of the backs who then offload into Gibson Park, running a good inside line. Before you know it, you're on your own try line and you're conceding penalties, and it is a mess. But I think that was always going to be a tough game. So much to work on for them going forward. Cardiff managed to get a win this week. Again, started strongly before giving everyone a bit of a scare and letting the Sharks back into it. But nonetheless, they got the win. Did you see that one, Dan?
I did, yeah. I really enjoyed this game. There seemed to be a really good atmosphere, didn't there? Down in Cardiff. And heard some singing. It was just so good, wasn't it, to see... a proper crowd, I suppose, really. And Cardiff put on a good performance. I think the pack really fronted up, didn't they, this weekend. I thought, you know, big performances from Turnbull.
Turnbull and Boyd were excellent.
I mean, Turnbull, the durability of the guy. He's making tackles, isn't he, all the way through the 80. Carries, sensible carries as well. He sets, you know, he rarely loses the ball. So they're not always huge yards, but it's a clever little setup for the side and they go again. Yeah, Boyd was great, wasn't he? Really physical. Shane Lewis Hughes, I thought, was good when he came on and looked a, you know, hard boy in the back row. And I thought Thornton, you know, got through a lot of work. he moves quite slowly, doesn't he? So you're always sort of left wanting more, I find, with him. But
it's a good line-out option, though, isn't he?
He got through a lot.
Cardiff.
And he got through a lot of work, didn't he, around the
I looked at that front five against South African opposition and thought this could be a tough night for Cardiff. But to be fair, a lot of it I thought was in the back row. But yeah, Thornton certainly put in a shift. Generally, I thought they looked better when they played the kicking game. And when they did do that, Priestland played it really, really well. I thought the halfbacks were excellent. And there were some really good glimpses in there from Halaholo as well, which, again, is all encouraging going into the autumn. But he was, that kind of 9, 10, 12 axis seemed to really work for me.
Yeah, Halaholo was made some superb carries, didn't he, when there wasn't really much on and he'd step in, difficult to put down. Priestland makes Cardiff look like a different side, really, I think, on the kicking front.
Yeah, the yardage they get out of him extra that they weren't getting before.
Yes.
It's so telling, over the course of a match. He's probably a few hundred metres, in territory on their game. So.
Yeah, he's so good. His kicking game's so great, isn't it? And when it's on, or when it's not on, he knows what to do. So I thought he was great. And it's just a really, really good really good win that for Cardiff overall.
I think it's obviously try for Matthew Morgan as well, which obviously I've got to mention, enjoyed that one.
I was just going to say, you did a special for yourself and Yestin.
Yeah, exactly. Really, really enjoyed that, especially like slipping out of the grips of a grisly South African number 8 as well.
Yeah, always. Must have really pissed him off.
that stuff's all to be enjoyed. I think that was good for them to get that win, Cardiff. I think you're right. I think Priestland adds that game management to them and that was kind of a big lift for them, and to getting the result, I think, was what really mattered. And they certainly did it. Yeah. They certainly weren't perfect, but I think that's something there to build on, isn't it? And like you say, the atmosphere sounded good, and it was a good few things in there to build on.
It's just before we finish on them, is Owen Lane played 13. And I still think that's his best chance of breaking into the Welsh side or the Welsh squad, because left and right wing, when everyone's available, is pretty much nailed down now, I'd say. And there is, like I say, there is a bit of a shortage of pace at 13 in the Welsh ranks. So I don't know if they're deliberately playing him for that reason. I don't know, but I think it's the best way forward for him.
It's been mooted for so long, hasn't it, that centre might well be his best position and stuff like that, but he's still not really played that many games for Cardiff at centre. It was interesting, the timing with it. I mean, I really like him. I think he's an excellent player for Cardiff. I just wonder whether he's got that out-and-out acceleration to play on the wing at international level as well. You know what I mean? Like, he's really physical and strong, and he is quick, but it's
good,
not
finisher.
Great finisher.
Not, no.
But it's not like off the mark lightning quick, is it? Which I think at test match level you've just got to be. And that again just makes you think that perhaps centre is his best bet. So yeah, it was interesting to see. I mean, I would have said it was a solid rather than particularly eye catching performance from him there. But
yeah, no, he wasn't outstanding. But moving forward, I just can't see him displacing Josh Adams or Louis Rees-Sammet from the Welsh side. So if he wants to be, I mean, he could still be in the squad, well, he is in the squad and getting games on the wing. But when it comes to out and out first choice, if he's going to start for Wales, I think it's only at the moment, it's only going to be in the 13 slot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
it's a good option on the bench as well, doesn't it? Potentially,
if he's both wings and 13 and
a few position. He's got a good rugby brain on him, isn't he? So, yeah, the centre seems to make Halaholo seem to enjoy playing with him, doesn't he?
Yeah, I just quickly as well, that turnover from Halaholo right at the death as well was absolutely massive. It's just, when you see a centre sticking his head in there, it's like you've got to come up and win the penalty or get the ball and he did just that. So that was a that was a big thing. I thought he had a massive performance actually. So yeah, good win for Cardiff. But yeah, two wins, two losses for the Welsh sides this weekend. As we move on into the second half, we are going to be talking about the Wales squad for the bulk of it. But then there's also a bit of transfer news, a bit of retirement news as well. And we'll also have a look at the fixtures for next week as well. So all of that is coming up in the second half of the show. Right, time now to turn our attention to international rugby. And Wayne Pivak announced his squad this week. A few kind of eye-catching selections into the mix, shall we say. I'll be looking forward to chatting to you guys about this. We'll just very quickly do a recap for anyone who's missed it or can't remember. Mainly us, I would say, as well, just to make sure we've got it right.
Specifically me.
Specifically, yeah, specifically Murph. Right, props. Wyn Jones, Rodri Jones, Rhys Carey, well, the loosehead props. Then hookers, Ken Owens, Elliot D, Ryan Elias. Tight heads, Dylan Lewis, Will Griff-John, Thomas Francis. In the second row, Alan Wyn Jones, Adam Beard, Will Rowlands, Ben Carter, Seb Davis, Chris Chiunza, which was definitely one of those eye-catching call-ups. And then in the back row, Ross Moriarty, Thomas Young, Tane Basham, Ellis Jenkins, Aaron Wainwright, Toby Faletau, and in the backs, scrum halves of Thomas Williams, Gareth Davis, Kieran Hardy, outside halves of Gareth Anscombe, Rhys Priestland, Dan Bigger, Callum Sheedy, centres Johnny Williams, John Fox, Nick Tompkins, Willis Halaholo, Ben Thomas, and then Josh Adams, Owen Lane, Lewis Rhys-Samit, Johnny McNichol, and Liam Williams in the back three. Whew. Right, where do you want to start, Dan?
I think we've got to start with you. I'm expecting half an hour full on Jed rant here.
The main thing for me is I think what we've learned out of this is that Rhys Webb and Wayne Pivak have had a massive falling out, because you can't have what I know, like, up until this weekend it was easy to say that Webb hadn't been, you know, his electric best. But Hardy has been stinking for a couple of weeks and playing in a side, you know, and that's not, you know, to say he's not going to recover his form or anything like that. But like we said last week, international rugby isn't the place to be doing it. And I don't know, I find that a really strange one. I think Rhys Webb should definitely be in there. I'm not entirely sure. Well, I mean, I don't know. Let's get your thoughts on that before we move on to the rest of my rant.
Yeah, I'm okay with the scrum halves. I think that scrum half is a problem position for us at the moment because no one's really taken the shirt. But you know, Thomas, a lot of talk. You know, if Thomas Williams or any of the scrum halves can get an actual run of games, it would be quite nice, wouldn't it? But I do think Hardy's got something about him. You know, looking at Rhys Webb on, you know, this weekend, he played really well, didn't he? Such a threat around the base, and a clever thinking nine. I think he does definitely offer something different to the other nines. But it's just a problem position, isn't it? But for me, I'm okay with Hardy being in there.
Murph?
But I'm okay with it. Yeah, Murphy, what about you?
I think he's just shelved, Rhys Webb. It doesn't matter how badly.
Well, he
Kieran
has,
Hardley. Yeah, I don't think it'd make any difference if... I don't know what age he is now, but I just think he's made the decision that...
Do you think that's it then?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. I do, definitely, based on this squad, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I mean, that's not even the biggest surprise, Rhys Webb. I know he's not out and out undroppable or performing so well you can't ignore him. But if you're Sam Davis and Rhys Priestland's just been picked ahead of you at the age of 35, I know Priestland's in good form and he's, you know, everyone can see from the way he helps Cardiff that he's useful. I just think it's literally for the All Blacks game.
Yeah, that's
so, because after that you've got Bigger and Sheedy back into the match day squad. So I don't know. I know he was expecting to be picked last year, wasn't he, or the year before, and they overlooked him. So he's another one that Pivac's just got no interest in at all.
No,
but, you know, when you, I don't know if you feel the same way about that or if it's just me, but there's others as well, like Rodri Jones. Like, he's not even first choice of the Ospreys.
It's
a little bit, it's a bit like, like his popularity with Pivac, it just mystifies me. I don't know, you know, he's solid enough, and but does he ever scream international to you when you watch him play for the Ospreys? He's just steady enough. And yet, I mean, he's barely, as far as I'm aware, Nicky Smith has started every game this season
until this weekend.
Until this weekend, after the game, after the squad had been announced.
Yeah.
It's like as if the Ospreys have gone, oops, we better chuck him in, he's going to be in the Welsh squad. You couldn't argue, the second rosy, I don't think there's any controversy in there at all.
No.
But
I don't have a problem with Christians getting a call up as well, because I think I'm right in saying he's not captured by his under 20 performances. I lose track of what our capture team is now, because I think technically our capture team is an A team that hasn't played a game since 2002, which just seems a bit mad. But you know, again, he's barely played any rugby. He's not going to be the finished article at all. But
wasn't he supposed to play for his university on the day he got picked for Wales? I think I read he was due to run out for Exeter. And then he got told he was in the Welsh squad. So I imagine that'll preclude him from playing any university rugby from now on. Maybe it won't, I don't know.
I like to think not.
I mean, he would look ridiculous. In fairness, university rugby is stronger than it's ever been, stronger than it ever was in my era of playing. Playing the universities for my club was always a soft touch in the 90s. And now, I mean, we my club played a friendly against Swansea University, a midweek friendly, got stuffed, and James Hook was their coach. And we haven't got those resources. And it seems like all the universities, Cardiff Met, Cardiff Uni, Swansea Uni, and all the ones, obviously the ones around England, just seem to be so well-funded and just huge squads full of talent all over the place. 21-year-olds are definitely bigger than they used to be when I was 21.
Well, Dom Brandt was playing for Cardiff Met. Yeah. It was Cardiff Met, wasn't it? I think he was playing
Cardiff
for
Met, Met.
And my God, that he is some player.
Yeah.
I mean, you find.
So I suppose it makes sense that a giant like Shunza is having a run out at university level, because it's full of really big boys these days. Tane Basham, I think I might have said that when he's fit and playing, I probably prefer Ollie Griffiths. I think Tane Basham has taken a big, massive dump over that opinion in the last couple of weeks.
I mean, look, I love Ollie Griffiths as well. I really do. And you know what? Ollie Griffiths it would be comfortably good enough to play Test match rugby on a consistent level, but he's never been able to stay fit for long enough, which is what's hindered him. I mean, Basham is the real deal for me. I think he's quick, he's powerful, he breaks tackles. He's, like Dan said, he's brilliant over the ball. I think he just seems to be
performing better every week at the moment.
Yeah.
Like from the start of the season, each game has got progressively better. So
he looks huge as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he's very tall. But
he's a proper powerhouse, isn't he? Legs, huge legs on him. You can see him pumping those through. Yeah. I think he's been absolutely huge these last 2 weeks, isn't he?
I think he starts seven against New Zealand.
I do as well. Yeah.
I just think you're gonna
starts for me
going into this game without so many players. I think there's gonna have to be a degree of something to catch them, you know, to try and catch them off guard. And you know, I think picking a player like him, who's got such a degree of X factor and could really announce himself and seems to be pretty fearless as well, I think I would go for it and chuck him in, quite possibly with his Dragons teammates alongside him.
Dragons back row.
I tell you what would be interesting is who of this back row selection, I don't know if we can work it out, maybe you can, would not be there if Tips and Navidi were fit.
Tom Young wouldn't, for a start.
You think?
No. I thought that was a left field call, to be honest.
Well, I was going to comment on that as well, actually. But so who else would you say? Would they still have gone with Chris Schunze?
I
think they got to, haven't they?
Yeah, and also I think with the autumn,
possibly Ellis Jenkins would miss out.
Yeah, but I think with the autumn as well, you just name a bigger. Yeah. It's not like the World Cup, is it? You just name a bigger squad, so you get. So you probably just sling Navidi. I would say Tom Young would miss out, and Navidi and then Tips would slot in there.
So on that Thomas Young thing, first of all, I was wondering why they were announcing publicly why he'd signed for Cardiff for next season when it's still 11 months away.
Yeah.
And then you realise 3 days later. Obviously,
when
as we know,
three games into this season.
Yeah. Obviously, we know from covering things on this podcast that these deals are done in the autumn and then they announce them in the spring. Yeah. You know, the negotiations with the agent and all that is done around this time of year or in the run-up to Christmas. And then they announce them in the spring as if it's a new thing. And within rugby, everyone knows months in advance. And so they've done this one early because he's about to be included in the Welsh squad. And also, it's just so weird how he follows his dad around professionally. I don't think of it. I can't. Well, maybe it happens in business a lot. I don't know, but where would he like? If he hadn't been signed, I think he got picked up by Wasps. Having been off, was he offloaded by Newport?
Was it Newport? I don't remember him being at Newport.
Was it the Dragons one? Wasn't he offloaded by the Blues Academy? No,
I just thought he went straight from Blues to.
I might have it all wrong then.
Once again,
you might be right.
The tapping you'll hear is me trying to fact check this.
I can imagine him being in the Premiership if it wasn't for his. I mean, he's a really good player and he deserves this, but without the opportunities provided by the fact that his dad's really a high level coach, he might not even be professional.
Dan.
I think he's a great player, isn't he?
He's miles better than he was even four seasons ago when he was first being raved about. He's improved since then, I think.
Yeah, he's probably it looks as if he's come on a huge amount, isn't it, since he's been over, you know, over the bridge. But that, you know, that happens to quite a lot of players, doesn't it, where they're sort of struggling for a place here, and then they go over the bridge, and then I don't know.
It helps when you're playing in better teams, though, doesn't it? Let's be honest. You know, it's happened.
Yeah.
I think you see players playing in England generally, they'll be playing in a better team than if they're playing for one of ours.
It's happened to a lot, like huge numbers, isn't it? Of our players have gone over, but I just think it's slightly. Peculiar from the more peculiar thing for me is that Cardiff need
more back row cover.
Cardiff
exactly.
Need,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's you know, can they move any of the back rowers into the front row and you know, and second row? It's that's the slightly perplexing thing for me. But
yeah, it's like a it's like a open sides like. Graveyard, because there's so much. Even people like Ollie Robinson, really high quality, and he's probably fourth choice, fifth choice, if Thomas, you know, when Thomas Young is there. I just think it's an odd situation. I'm just working my way through the squad. The other one I think is a shade luckier, based on his Welsh form. Nick Tompkins.
What the hell is that about? Like, well, I haven't seen him play.
Just because he's left the Dragons, Jed?
No, it's not that at all. Like, it's just, it's like the wheels. I know this is going to sound like massive pro one-eyed dragon stuff tonight. Because I'm like, oh yeah, start all the back rowers. We haven't even got on to Jonah Holmes yet.
I'm working my way down the team, so don't worry.
Get yourself another espresso, Murph. Because we'll get a beer in a while. Look, I haven't seen him play for Saracens this season, but I mean, he's not been playing well for Wales at all. He would fall into that bracket of Pivac favourite, you know, right now. He's one of those players. Him, Johnny Williams, I think Johnny Williams is absolutely the right call to be in the squad. Ryan Elias is obviously a favourite of his. Rodri Jones is a favourite of his. He's, you know, having only been in charge for a couple of seasons, we know already who those players that he really, really likes and really doesn't seem to rate are. And Tompkins definitely falls into that bracket. I mean, the guy has talent, and like I've said before, his Wales debut, I think, is the best debut I've ever seen from any Wales player in my lifetime. I can't think of any other one where I was just like, oh my God, this is, you know, it was incredible. He looked electric. And he's got the talent, but it's stringing it together on a regular basis. And sometimes it just looks like he's not sure what he's going to do with his feet next at international level.
Yeah, he doesn't look like capable of playing in a
structured
a swift backline in terms of handling. Do you know what I mean? Slick handling backline doesn't look like that sort of player at all. The only thing I would say in his defence is being back at Saracens has probably done the world of good for his confidence and his game generally. So that might help him. But the next one, this is like the Murphy complaining show. The next one who's had seems like he's had 15 minutes all season. And I'm a fan, but he seems like he's had 15 minutes all season. Ben Thomas.
Yeah.
One start, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure. I think he might have started last week. So that one seems... Not the way, you know, crowded for centres in this country at the moment. And then, obviously, this is just me reaching the bottom of the pile now and queuing you up for Johnny McNichol versus... I've forgotten the name of the player I'm thinking of from the Dragons.
Jonah Holmes.
Yeah, Johnny McNichol versus Jonah Holmes.
I mean, the other strange one in there is: are we expecting Liam Williams to be fit?
It must be. I mean, it must be.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not played a minute so far, has he?
No.
Very odd.
I don't know. Maybe he's going to be fit for the Benetton game this weekend. But again, you're asking a lot. You're asking a lot of a player to get up to speed to play against New Zealand. You know, then, I mean, so realistically, you might have only three players out of that back three fit to play against against New Zealand. Lewis Rees-Sammet won't be able to do it. Liam Williams might not be fit. And so then you've got McNichol at fullback, which, you know, he's not an international quality fullback at all. And then Lane and Adams.
Yeah.
Anscombe possibility at fullback.
Not if there's no other 10s available.
Has to start 10.
Yeah.
I mean, unless he selects Priestland at 10 and Anscombe at 15. But I mean, surely we're past this Anscombe is a 15 stuff now. Like he's got to be playing 10, I think.
But with that squad, I honestly think Priestland has a very, very good chance of starting 10. I really
do.
Even if he doesn't start it, he's going to... I can't see Anscombe playing a full 80 against New Zealand, even if he starts at 10. So he's going to get minutes Anscombe in that game, but whatever happens.
I'm worried about Anscombe being involved, so I really am.
I'm worried about the whole 15.
Yeah, I am. The longer this is going on, I'm just starting to panic. But... from a fitness, from a sort of, you know, from a mental side as well, you need to go through a number of games. It's only been four games and he's coming into this. I just don't think it's the right call. But
well, I don't think it is either. But there's literally him or, you know,
you're
Sam
asking
Costello.
You're asking him to get through one game though, aren't you? You know, that's it. It'll be about getting through the New Zealand game unscathed. And then realistically, Biggar's back in the shirt. Unless Anscombe spearheads a victory over New Zealand, and then all bets are off. But
it's one game to get through. But if he gets injured, that's the end of the career.
He could get injured against Treviso. He could get injured against Zebra. You know,
but more games under the belt.
He started the first three games this season. Didn't this weekend, but. I don't think they'd put him there if he wasn't. I don't think he'd put himself in that position if he wasn't fit. He wouldn't be playing for the Ospreys if there was any chance that he wasn't fully up to scratch. It's a nasty injury, and you could get a reoccurrence. Of course, you could. But I think having spent 2 years on the sidelines, I think all the medical staff are fully happy that he's ready to go again.
Well, if everyone was available. You know, if this wasn't outside the international window, it would be Biggar with Anscombe on the bench. There'd be no, the other two wouldn't have a sniff, even on on the back of the fact that he's only had three games back and he's been a long time out. He is still better than Sheedy and he's still better than Priestland. So,
well, he is, but again, I think Sheedy might well fall into that bracket of a Pivac favourite as well at the moment. But yeah, I mean, for me, if everyone was available for selection, bigger starts and Anscombe off the bench, I think that'd be, you know.
Who would, just going back to the Ben Thomas, who do you think's unlucky, you know, not to get?
Well, that was kind of what I was getting at when I said it's not as if we're buried in top quality centres.
No, but you've got four centres in the squad already, plus Lane, who could play centre, you know, whereas in the back three, you've got five players, one of whom is injured and one of whom can't play the New Zealand game. So I don't get the Jonah Holmes omission there at all.
It's really surprising, isn't it?
You know, when we've seen him play really well, he's strong, he runs good lines, he's an excellent finisher, he's quicker than I gave him credit for. I just don't get it.
Oh, the one name that this is possibly unlucky if say Ben Thomas or Tompkins have picked is Owen Watkin.
Yeah, he doesn't rate him, does he? He
doesn't like him.
But would you personally? I would especially against the All Blacks. I would want Owen Watkin instead of Tompkins and Ben Thomas if I'm coming off the bench.
Ditto.
Because the first choice is injured, I'd rather him than both of those two. Even though I'm a huge Ben Thomas fan.
Yeah, I am. But he's very much a work in progress, right? You know, and I think
he's a very small bloke. I've seen him in the flesh. He's not a big guy.
The other thing is with Watkin, he's actually got a lot of experience. That he seems to be a bit like Marmite.
Yeah,
he seems to be a bit like Marmite. Some people really don't rate him and a lot of others do. But he carries really hard, doesn't he? And he's direct. His defence is good. I think that's the wrong call not to have him in the squad.
I agree. I think he's got experience. And he's not the kind of player I'd be tossing to one side right now at this stage in his career when he's, 25? And, you know, like we said before, right, those strips that he does where he strips the ball so well, you get two of those in a game. If you had an open side flanker who picks you up two turnovers or two turnover penalties, you're giving him a massive pat on the back. He can very easily do that in international rugby and turn the ball over for you by stripping it. I think it's a massive asset. And I don't know. I mean, I've not seen from Tompkins any level of consistency that says that he should be ousting him, and ditto. I think Ben Thomas is just is, like we say, he's not really played much rugby this season, and he's got a lot to develop. Although again, I'm a big fan of his.
I'd probably go so far as to say, not necessarily with Ben Thomas, but with Nick Tompkins, I possibly prefer Nye Owen. In fact, I definitely prefer Nye Owen. There's a huge following for Kieran Williams as well. And at least they both play in this country.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've obviously lost track of why he is eligible.
He signed a long-term contract with Saracens just before he was picked in the first Welsh squad, which is obviously one of those things where they've had a word with his agent first, a little bit like Thomas Young in the background, and said, by the way, we're about to pick him. Can you announce it? Can you announce a long deal? Or in Thomas Young's case, can you announce that he's about to sign for a Welsh club so we can pick him next week? So it's funny how these things work, isn't it, behind the scenes?
Yeah, it is. And the other thing with those, you know, like with Thomas Young, where they're announcing that they're kind of coming back, it was still meant to be kind of extenuating circumstances, wasn't it? And I think that you know, there was an opportunity for Priestland, what were we talking, Six Nations, was it? Because he'd already announced he was coming back to Cardiff, but either the WRU or Pivac didn't have it. I think it might have been the WRU weren't having it in that scenario. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure I can see Thomas Young getting much game time this autumn. So for that to be an extenuating circumstance, I don't know. And, you know, unless there's injuries, I don't, you know. I mean, he's a seven, isn't he, really? And I think he's probably the third choice seven out of the...
These days, he seems, having watched Wasps a fair amount, he seems to be just as effective at six. Because he's just got so strong over the kind of season after season of training.
I think we'll see him at six.
If we're going to play any wide games against anyone, I don't know who we're going to do that against. He's actually, in the absence of tips, he's actually our best continuity player picked in terms of linking up with the backs out wide and creating things in, say, the style of a Martin Williams type thing.
Yeah, and he knows the one way to the try line as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, because, I mean, Tain's not a link-up guy. He's just a machine, like, you know. He's just relentlessly coming at you with good feet and all that. And Ellis Jenkins is like a breakdown operator, so...
Murph, can he play 15, do you know?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, that's all right, then. I feel better.
Yeah, honestly, genuinely, though, if we're going to play expansive, which I don't know what we're going to play, He's the best open side for that game in the Welsh squad. So there
you go. Big shout. Yeah. Right, Dan. Just quickly then to wrap up. We always rely on you to give us either a bit of balance or a bit of optimism. Who are you most excited about seeing from that squad?
Oh, am I most excited? Tain Basham. I'm really excited about seeing. I think there's been a lot of talk about him over the years, isn't there? And he's been in and around squads from a very, very young age. But the last two games, I've seen a totally different, a different side to him. And he's playing with like such an intensity that it seems like sides can't keep up with him, in everything he does. I must admit, though, you know, people that are close to the ground with him may say, well, no, he's always been like that. I don't know, but that's certainly my take on it. So I can't wait to see him be unleashed against these big sides now. I think we're in for everything. The stage is set for him now, isn't it, to really go on and just have an absolute blinder. So really excited to see how he goes, really. I think Aaron Wainwright, I think this is a big autumn for him. You know, he could do something. We need to see something more from him, didn't we? Good bit of promise at eight, and then I think it's fair to say he dropped off a little, probably found it a little bit tough then for a period of time, and now seems to be coming back into it again. Carter as well, looking forward to seeing him. I thought he got through a load of work on the weekend, and he's a young guy against those big South Africans, and he tended to ride things fairly well. You don't see anything spectacular from him. He's not that type of guy. It's nuts and bolts, work rate, and just goes and goes and goes, and he's really durable. So looking forward to seeing him. Jonah Holm. Oh, no, he's not.
You've picked enough Dragons to keep your eye on, mate. It's like you found my notes for the week. Let's finish by just having a look at the fixtures for next week.
I wanted to see who I'm excited about.
Oh, sorry, Murph. Go on, mate.
That's okay. I'll live. Leaving the obvious ones aside, I suppose everyone will be pleased to see back is Ellis Jenkins and Gareth Anscombe, both over 2 years, well over 2 years, I think, in some cases, to say being involved.
In Ellis's case, yeah.
Yeah. Likewise, Ben Carter, also Chris Schunzer, obviously. I don't think either of them are going to play against the big nations, but they'll either make the bench or the Fiji game. I obviously hope they both get capped them and everything. And then my usuals, they're mainly forwards. Reece Carey.
Yeah.
Ellis Jenkins is a nervy one because he looks like he's bust his ribs yesterday.
Yeah, they said precautionary, didn't they? We'll see. I think the news today was better than anticipated, so hopefully he's going to feature.
Yeah, and also just purely because he had his first cap snatched away by the pandemic, Will Griff John. I don't know how close he'll be to, you know, the big games, but I mean, he plays for the Scarlets, so he might end up captain. So just mainly forwards. I'm excited for, as usual.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see Will Griff John on the bench against New Zealand, actually.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're facing a heavy scrummaging side, our three tight heads is Will Griff, Thomas Francis, and Dylan Lewis.
Yeah,
Dylan Lewis is good off a bench, but
yeah, he is.
Depends who happens to be playing loose head for South Africa at the time. You know what I mean? You don't expose him to Kitshoff or anything. So it might end up with with Will Griff getting the game there. So we'll see. Yeah. Although I thought the way he got stretched off earlier in the season, I thought we weren't going to see him again this year.
Yeah, didn't we decide that wasn't him?
Well, did we?
Oh. I thought we did. Yeah, I thought it was someone else got injured in that first Scarlets game.
Oh, that's okay. That explains a lot. Think, yeah. We haven't really seen him on the pitch since. It's been Samson a lot since. Yeah. So I wonder. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, he's obviously fit, enough to be in the squad.
Probably a little bit fitter than Liam Williams.
Yeah, probably. You'd hope so. Hmm. But anyway, there we go. Yeah, it sounds like I've got a massive downer on it. I just thought it was odd selection. But, you know, it's all about how it gels, isn't it? You know, obviously he's going in a different direction to what Gatland had done. And it's about the 23.
If it gels like it did in the summer, we're going to get absolutely battered.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I mean, those, again, in the interest of balance and whatnot, those summer tours are, you know, they're in Lions years, they're different beasts, aren't they? You know, when you've got your entire first 15 not around, it's a different thing. You know, obviously we lost to Japan in 2013, didn't we? And they're always odd things, but I don't know. Yeah. For me, this is it now. This is the real acid test for what Pivac's able to do. I think it was, like I said before, it was a weird Six Nations. So even to win it was amazing, but it almost comes with a bit of a caveat. So yeah, we'll see what the autumn holds in store.
Yeah.
Quickly then, ahead to next weekend's fixtures. The joys of all the internationals going and then having to watch the UFC. I'd actually enjoyed this start to the season. I thought it'd been much more competitive across the board. You know, a bad performance is a bad performance, but there seem to have been a lot less one-sided games with a few noticeable exceptions.
Scarlets aside, they've all been competitive.
Yeah.
So, you know, no hiding's dished out to anyone except them, so.
Yeah, and possibly the Ospreys the week before, but again, the scoreline wasn't that hiding, it was just an awful performance. But anyway, the Scarlets, while we talk about them, they got Benetton on the Friday night. Dan, they're gonna turn things around and get the win there at home?
Have to. So Scarlet's win. Yeah, it's an absolute must win, isn't it?
Murph?
Yeah, and like you say, the good news is it's an absolute must win and all the squad players are gone. Hmm. Which I don't know what that leaves them with in the centre. I mean, it's the first three centres will be unavailable. Scott Williams, John Davis and Johnny Williams, all unavailable for the Scarlets. So that would leave you with the Aussie guy.
Steph Hughes.
Yeah.
Asquith's gone now, isn't he?
Oh, is he? Oh, right, okay.
I think he left in the summer, yeah.
What a great player as well. He was.
Yeah, he was a good player.
So, God knows. I mean, that's really hard. I mean, the timing of that, sort of going into a must-win game with all the internationals being taken away is almost as bad as getting stuffed by Munster and then having to play Leinster away the following week.
Presumably Italy are without their internationals as well. Sorry, the Benetton are without their Italian internationals as well, are they?
Well, are they playing outside the international window, though?
Good point.
They probably
one
still
assumes
off.
Not.
Yeah, only we would do anything so stupid as that. I mean, in fairness, they have said it's worth £4 million to the union. So, and in light of the last couple of years, it might make sense. But
you've got to play the game. It's just so bloody annoying that it's outside the international window, isn't it? You know, if you can play New Zealand a week later, then
I'm surprised New Zealand has said yes to a game outside the international window. When we play, well, in fairness, it normally be at the end. We play outside of the window at the end of the autumn, and then it'll normally be South Africa on December the 5th or something like that. We don't normally get New Zealand outside the window, so
normally play a game in October, do we? It's normally
exactly
in November or December. Yeah.
They must be glad of the money as well over there.
Yeah, well, it comes with a big fat check. You know, New Zealand don't get off their arse for less than a big sum of money.
Yeah.
Right then, yeah, I think the Scarlets will get back. I think that could be tries galore that game actually, and based on the Scarlets' defence, but also their attack, I think we could be in for. I think we could be in for a thriller.
Both their scrum halves are gone as well. I mean, it's really gouged out their side that if everyone's unavailable next week, and their front row.
That's a bloody good point, isn't it?
Yeah, the second rows will be the same because they're.
So it'd be Dane Blacker.
It would probably be Dane Blacker at nine.
I like him.
Good nine. You still have Callum Afoni and, you know, everyone like that, but your wingers are gone. well, you,
Tom Rogers will be there. Yeah, Tom Rogers will be there, and Steph Evans will be around.
Steph Evans, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was trying to be dramatic.
Ah, I tell you who's good this weekend. Sorry, and this is it. And I think he's going to have a blinder, and he's probably going to play in the centre. Was Jon Nicholas at 15. I thought he played very well, actually. And
I thought he was robbed on that one try where the crossfield kick and the camera, which Leinster player was, just slapped it out of his hand. I thought that was a knock on all day.
Clear knock on, wasn't it? Yeah. But there we go. So there you go. I'm going for Scarlet's win there. Right, Cardiff versus the Dragons. As we said earlier, Dragons shorn of virtually their entire pack, and it's at Cardiff. I can only see a home win there.
Yeah, especially the way the Dragons' back row have been going, and now that none of them are there.
Back row worries me less, I suppose, because I think you've still got Harry Keddie and Ollie Griffiths to come into the mix. Admittedly, the players who've gone are absolute quality, but there is and always has been kind of depth in the back row. I think it's when you then counter in the changes that are going to have to be made in the front five as well, because you're shorn of both your locks.
If previous derbies are anything to go by, it'll be about 9-6.
Yeah. Tipping it down.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game, but I'm going to say Cardiff will edge that. But if the Dragons can hold them up front, I think the backs could cause them a bit of an issue with Sam's kicking game as well. Because don't forget, the Blues will be hit at 10 as well, won't they? So
I can't even work out who's going to play 10. It'll have to be Jason Tovey, won't it?
Is he still there?
Yes, he's still there. He? Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's
because Jarrett's signed another 10 years. Sternum injury. Ben Thomas is also in the squad, and then so there's no one. And if anything happens to Jason Tovey in the first few minutes, it's going to be some academy boy coming on, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think a lot of it will depend on Sam Davis is kicking game, and then if they can take some heavy runners down the 10s channel. That's where it could level out a bit, because Cardiff will have the stronger pack, won't they? You'd expect. So yeah, really, really fascinating one, that one, actually. I think for me.
And then straight after is the Ospreys Munster at the Liberty. I'd know what to make of that. I mean, again, if we're saying that if the Irish players will be available, then I think the Ospreys will be too hard hit by all the internationals being out, and it'll be an away win then.
Yeah, I. That could be ugly, actually, if it goes that way, because then they've gone off the boil since their first couple of matches, and then if you take Alan Wynn out, and if you take Reese Webber, still be there at least, but if you take Anscombe out, and then it gets a bit, Thomas Francis against the Munster pack, could be.
Yeah, so you'll have Boater will come into the front row, you'd imagine, and then.
Yeah, Rodri's not there either, is he? You have Nicky Smith. Nicky Smith, yeah.
Wayne Pivak's done him a massive favour.
They're going to go very well.
Yeah. But it could, I can't see him beating Munster if Munster have got everyone they want to pick. Put it that way.
Munster win for me.
There you have it. I thought our predictions were quite good this week. I instantly forget them whenever we've done them, but I had a strange feeling. I said narrow Dragons loss. I don't know. Who cares?
I think we should put a couple of quid on them. We'd remember them then.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Problem is that when you want to put a couple of quid on them a week in advance, you've got no idea what the bloody teams are going to look like.
Yeah. You've got to wait till Thursday. Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, let's try and remember them for next week.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll have a look at that. We'll get a little
accumulator.
Yeah, why not? That pretty much brings us to a nice conclusion for this week. Thank you as always to Dan and to Murph. Thank you for listening. Thank you as well to a couple of reviews that we had in that coincided with our fifth birthday. So thank you to Long Dog and to Keith Greening. That's much appreciated. If you want to leave us a review, then you can do so on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods. That's massively appreciated, and we'll be back to talk rugby with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.